When people hear NASA, they probably think of space exploration and other planets. But NASA has teams of scientists dedicated to further studying a planet closer to home, Earth. Our next guest spent time with a team of NASA researchers flying over the bleak landscape of Antarctica to measure the decline of glaciers. Eric Betts joins us now. He's an associate editor at Discover Magazine based in Waukesha. Eric, thanks for joining us today.
Thanks for having me, Rob.
Well, before we get into some of the science, tell us what it's like being up in the plane flying over Antarctica with this NASA team.
It's pretty incredible. I mean, you can't really get a good idea of what it's like down there until you've actually been there. But, you know, there's ice from just horizon to horizon when you're flying over these ice sheets. And you're looking down on crevasses that drop hundreds of feet below. So, I mean, the whole experience kind of feels like you're on an alien world. Pretty fun.
And how long do these flights go? You're coming from the southern tip of South America, right?
Yeah, NASA's Operation Icebridge base is actually in Punta Arenas, which, as you said, is at the southern tip of South America, and they fly 4 hours across the ocean to get to the Antarctic continent, and then they spend about 4 hours crisscrossing glaciers, going back and forth over these mountains and across the ice, and then another 4 hours back, so it's a total of 12-hour flight every day. So it gets pretty grueling for these guys that, you know, they make these flights day after day for months on end down at the South Pole, and then they pack up and they head north and they go to Greenland and they go to Alaska and they do it all over again.
Does it ever occur to you flying up there that, hey, if we had to make an emergency landing, we're in about as middle of nowhere as you're going to get on this planet?
You know, I try not to think about that too much, and the NASA team has been doing it for long enough that it wasn't too concerning for me. I know that when they first started doing these flights back in the late 90s and early 2000s, that was a major concern for them because no one had ever done anything like this before. Even today, it's rare to have, you know, this sort of a flight back and forth. So it's a little bit disconcerting, but you got to trust these pilots that are that have control over the plane. You know, one of the guys that I flew with the first day, he had just come from flying U-2 retrofitted spy planes over Africa with NASA, studying climate change there. So, you know, I figure if this guy can fly a U-2, he can probably fly a converted passenger jet okay.
Let's talk about what these flights are measuring now. What are they looking at as they fly over Antarctica?
Yes, yeah, so as I mentioned before, they're flying a passenger plane, and in the belly of the passenger plane, where you would normally have kind of the baggage compartment, they've turned that into an instrument bay. And they have a telescope, a small telescope that points down. And they have sort of a conventional, you know, DSLR digital camera that just snaps thousands of pictures. There's a radar instrument. There's an infrared instrument that kind of takes the heat of the ice. There's a gravimeter, which measures these very weak changes in Earth's gravitational field so that over time they can kind of get a sense of you know, how things are changing down there and how much ice is shifting and melting year to year.
And people might think NASA equals space. Why is NASA focused on studying this particular planet, Earth?
Yeah, that's a great question. You know, I think when most people think about NASA, they obviously think of astronauts and they think of, you know, Hubble Space Telescope. But NASA actually has a pretty long legacy of doing this Earth research. And they really do it because they're the ones who kind of can. You know, this started very early on in their history, and really accelerated in the 1980s as scientists were starting to wonder what the effect of burning fossil fuels was going to be. There was a lot of speculation early about climate change, but there was some debate as to who would get sort of the contracts to do this sort of research. And, you know, they looked at the Department of Transportation, from what I understand, looked at the Department of Energy, and ultimately it fell to NASA because they had the experience with this sort of planetary exploration. And throughout the 1990s, their budget grew, and now they have a couple billion dollars a year they spend on this stuff. And they've got dozens of Earth-orbiting spacecraft that study everything from soil moisture to carbon dioxide levels and obviously ice. And then they have, in addition to that, they have ships and a fleet of aircraft, including the plane that I was on, Operation Icebridge.
And NASA does kind of comparative planetology in a way. I understand, and you write that global warming, as we understand it on Earth, we learned about it in part by studying Venus.
Yeah, that was one of the kind of shocking things that came out of some of the trips to other planets in the early days of space exploration. You know, scientists on Earth already knew about climate change for a while. It was already kind of a thought that putting carbon dioxide in the atmosphere would have this greenhouse effect. But I think there was kind of a shocking moment where we sent the Pioneer mission to Venus, and we saw this enormous greenhouse effect that was happening there that, you know, created temperatures on the surface of Venus that could melt lead. And so that caused some scientists to sort of shift their focus back home, including one of the scientists I interview in the mission, in the story this month, James Hansen, who's one of the better-known climate scientists. He was actually originally a Venus researcher and shifted to study Earth's climate based on his research.
We're talking to Eric Betts from Discover Magazine about NASA flights over Antarctica to measure the ice, to measure glaciers and other changing conditions there, and how it all fits into the global warming puzzle. Eric, what are they finding with these flights over Antarctica?
So one of the most important findings that they've had is that this region that we were flying over, called the Amundsen Sea, scientists think of it as Antarctica's weak underbelly because it's thousands of feet thick of ice, and the ground beneath this ice is actually below sea level. And so one of the things that they've been finding as they fly back and forth over these glaciers is that as they retreat back, they retreat inland, and this is kind of crazy to get your head around, but as they retreat inland, they're actually going downhill because of the way the continent is underneath the ice. And so as the warm water washes up beneath the glaciers, it melts them and pushes them back, pushes them downhill. And what the takeaway from all this is basically is that scientists have come to think over the last couple of years that the melting in this region is actually unstoppable. And some of these glaciers there are the size of U.S. states. We're talking very large glaciers that actually hold back inland glaciers and inland ice sheets, like the entire West Antarctic ice sheet. So these flights have actually revealed that if we don't take action on climate change, basically, we should expect to see these glaciers retreat into the ocean.
And that seems like the big difference there. If there's a glacier and ice shelf over water and that melts, it doesn't really change the water level. But in effect, it sounds like these glaciers are a plug for all the land-based glaciers. And if those start flowing in, we could see really big sea level rises.
That's right, Rob. Yeah, and you know, one of the things that they've seen recently is that there's warmer ocean water coming up underneath these, as I said before. And you know, usually when we think of Greenland, we think of other ice that's melting. We think of sort of the surface effect where you have, you know, hot sun beating down on it starts to melt. But this is really being caused by these warm currents that undercut the glaciers, undercut these ice sheets, and then that causes, as you said, additional ice to flow into the ocean, kind of pulling a stopper.
Is there a snowball effect here where this happens some and that leads to more, it kind of accelerates itself?
That's the fear. There's still a lot of work to be done here, and that was one of the main reasons I wanted to do this story, because some of this is really well-established science now, but the big question scientists are trying to answer is how soon is soon? You know, how quickly should we expect this melting to happen? And we really don't have a good handle on that right now. So there's some projections that look over the next couple decades, the coming decades, the next century, and they see dramatic ice melting, significant sea level rise, and there's some projections that are showing, you know, many centuries, perhaps 1,000 years, and those are less likely scenarios at this point, but there's still a lot of wiggle room there that could have major impacts for civilization. In the U.S. alone, there's millions of people who live along the coast, and if we see 1 or 3 feet of sea level rise even, that would displace millions of people.
And that idea that there could be 1 or 2 feet of sea level rise, largely from these Antarctic glaciers, that seems plausible?
Yeah, well, I mean, the largest question with sea level rise is the heat that gets trapped from the greenhouse effect and causes the ocean to expand. And this is just kind of a double whammy, too, where you have the oceans are already rising, and we know that we're going to see melting around the planet from, you know, various other land glaciers from Greenland, Canada, Russia, all over the world. But these Antarctic glaciers are huge, flying over top of these things. I mean, they go as far as the eye can see. And so if we start to get some of these ones, completely melting. You know, like there's one called Thwaites, which is one of the scariest glaciers that scientists are really worried about right now. The National Science Foundation's gearing up with like a $25 million project. They're going to go down there and really try and study this one glacier in detail. It's about the size of Pennsylvania, and if this one were to go, it would cause 9 feet of sea level rise just itself.
Eric, working with these researchers, talking to them, do you get a sense of urgency, like this is the place we should be watching when it comes to climate change and potential sea level rise?
I think so. I think most Antarctic researchers kind of see this as ground zero for climate change and for glacial melt. This is the spot in the world where glaciers are melting fastest, and it's kind of the spot where the terrain really puts it in the crosshairs. You know, there's lots of ice in other places in Antarctica, but nowhere is it as unstable as it is in this Amundsen Sea region.
Eric, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me, Rob. I appreciate it.
That was Eric Betts, associate editor at Discover Magazine, based in Waukesha. He joined us to share his experience with NASA teams studying climate change in Antarctica.